Shirley Mackay, the roles have been reversed, the tables have been turned.
I'm so excited for you launching your new podcast, but I'm a little bit scared for me, because there is even ends.
No need to be scared, I'm gentle. So how does it feel, first of all, to have the tables turned and be the interviewee rather than the interviewer?
You know what? Sometimes it depends which day you ask me, which is a complete cop-out. I quite like just being able to rock up with no preparation and say whatever I want. But on the other hand, when you're on the receiving end, it sort of feels like you're relinquishing control as well. So, and I also think, bizarrely, just to start off with, when it's somebody you know, especially somebody that you're so close to, there's like another level of pressure, even though that kind of dissipates quickly, I hope. And then we get into just a real normal chat. Like, we literally spent the last week just talking incessantly to each other. Then you get the camera on, I'm like, oh, what am I going to say?
You're going to say all the right things, because I'm going to be gentle with you, don't worry. But you mentioned the lack of control. Is that something that you struggle with? Do you like being in control of things? Do you like relinquishing control to other people? Does it depend on the circumstance?
You know what? I definitely like to conduct the orchestra, for sure. But I think in business, not necessarily just podcasting, the only way to grow is to surround yourself with people that know way more than you do. You know, I always say I'm not very skilled in many areas of life apart from surrounding myself with people who are skilled. So for that reason, I tend to bow to their expertise. But the challenge is just making sure you've got the right team in the first place.
So that was actually going to lead on to my next question. I was a HR manager for a long time. I spent a lot of time learning how to put the right people into the right jobs, and I made many a mistake. How do you know the right people are to surround yourself with? There's a lot of really good people out there, but it doesn't matter what niche or industry we're talking about. There's a lot of good people out there. There's a lot of sharks and a lot of people to avoid. How do you identify the good from the bad?
It's usually test and measure. It's usually from making mistakes, making wrong hires, or working with the wrong freelancers, subcontractors. I wish I had a better answer for you, but it tends to be just learning through your own mistakes. Even with our podcast, for example, over the last 2.5 years, we've made so many mistakes. I wouldn't change anything, because the learnings from them have been invaluable. But we've worked with multiple external agencies to do our video editing, our videography, etc., that have not panned out. We've brought multiple people in-house, we've trained them up, they've not panned out. So I think it's a tricky one. I think you get better, your bullshit detector definitely gets better, but ultimately everyone talks the talk, don't they? Everyone talks the talk. And then when it comes down to it, not everyone does what they say they're going to do. So yeah, it's just lots of blood, sweat and tears.
So one of the things that you always talk about is when you say, you know, you go through the blood, sweat and tears, lots of people walk the walk, but not many people talk the talk. How does it make you feel when, because I know that to you, relationships, you always say the highest form of currency, and you mean what you say and you say what you mean. How does it make you feel when people don't necessarily
do what they say they're going to do?
Yeah, I was trying to find the light bike.
Look, we just interviewed Master Shri, and he's all about the situation only has the meaning that you choose to attach to it, and, you know, reacts to things in a very different way. And that is exactly what I'm aspiring towards. But that is not my current reality. You know, when somebody tells me they can do X, Y and Z, they'll do whatever it takes, and then they come and start working for you and they're, you know, clock watching and under delivering, and they don't have the skill set that they said that they had. It's hard, you know, it's really challenging. And this is probably the biggest challenge that I've faced since launching our property business as well. We've had builders that we've had to sack mid-development because they're not turning up on site. We've had investors backing out at the 11th hour. We've had vendors pull out on the day of completion. And I think that was something I really struggled with, because integrity is something that's so important to me. And yeah, I think the skill is not becoming disillusioned with mankind, so that when you're meeting new people, you're still giving them that same sort of blank canvas that they deserve, really, because otherwise it's guilty until proven otherwise.
It's hard though, isn't it? Because one of the things that you always do is you manage to pull people's stories out of them. you know, you say you love conversation with people, you like interviewing exciting people, but you don't always practice what you preach. And what I mean by that
Oh, go on, throw me under the bus. Pop a turn.
No. You and I have had lots of conversations when cameras aren't rolling. Yeah. We talk quite a lot about, you know, it's not even an imposter syndrome. It's the, if I tell my story, you know, have a million people heard it already? Or because you become either used to saying the same things, or you've said it once or twice, so you think everybody has heard it.
Yeah.
But not everybody has heard it. You've been through some massive, massive highs. You've had some phenomenal guests. You know, you've hit the heights of success when it comes to raising finance and property and building a podcast that's, you know, reached heights that many people have been trying to do for many years. But you've also had a lot of lows that for many people, it would literally stop them in their tracks.
I think something that we're all guilty of, and you as well, because I've pulled you up about this just even in this last week in Dubai, is it's hard getting that balance of being humble, being proud of your achievements, yeah, remaining humble, but also telling your truth as well, because I am definitely guilty of sharing the lows, yeah, because I want people to understand that it's not been easy.
Yeah.
You know, if I can do it, anyone can do it. I truly believe that, but it's been challenging. I don't want to make it seem like you go on a course, you're
fixed.
That's it. You're a multimillionaire within 18 months, because that's definitely not been my reality. But still to this day, I think I can be guilty of not sharing the wins, not yeah, sharing the achievements, even with my closest friends. Mm-hmm. I think because usually the things that I need the guidance on or I need to have a vent about are the lows, yeah, you know, and also within my inner circle, I think people generally know that we are doing well. We are, in quotation marks, successful. Obviously, success yeah, is a lot more than money in the bank, as we've realised. But yeah, I definitely think that that's something that the majority of people are getting. It's quite difficult to find that happy balance, isn't yep, it? Because people can either come across as a bit of a Billy Big Balls yeah, or
arrogant.
Yeah, really arrogant. You know, the big I am. And I'm always quite wary of those people. But perhaps when I'm sharing the vulnerabilities, I perhaps need to lace it with a bit of, but now look at what we're yeah, doing sort of thing.
Like a final point on it, because it's easy for people. People are going to judge you anyway, aren't they? You know, it's easy for people to sit back and say it's all right for you, but your podcast's massively successful, but there's been the hard yards in there. You've talked about, you know, the challenges in hiring people, the challenges in finding the right equipment, the right places, all of those different things.
And even getting sponsors and things like that as well, because we started out with a 20 quid mic from Amazon and a laptop, uploading all our own podcasts. We didn't know anything about audio cleanup or anything like that. Yeah. But I invested quite heavily into my infrastructure. You know, I had a full-time member of staff working on it pretty quickly. We were doing all our own marketing, all our own promotion. But it kind of got to the point where I was spending like $5,000 a month on it, $6,000 a month on it, $7,000 a month on it. And I thought, okay, yeah, what started out as a passion project is now taking a lot of my time
yeah,
and a lot of my financial resources. So let's get some sponsorship and let's start commercializing it as well. Because obviously the more money that you can bring into your little ecosystem means the more we can continue to grow and upgrade our equipment and have access to really cool guests and continue to deliver. Yeah, and it's at a standard, isn't it? Because I'm a high performance person, I'm always yeah, looking at what other people are doing, and the more money you've got to be able to invest, I still don't even take any profit from it. We've got multiple six-figure sponsorship deals now, and that money just goes, it goes straight back in, because I know at some point that we're going to be earning significantly more than that as well. And, you know, as we've discussed, the more you earn, the more you can contribute, the more you can hire new staff, and the more you can give and have a good quality of life as well for you and your family.
So I have a number of questions off the back of that. Was there ever a point where you've thought, why am I doing this?
I still do sometimes, to be honest. Yeah, just for fleeting moments.
Yeah.
You know, if an interview's not went to plan or somebody's mucked me around or perhaps I'm doubting my own abilities, because we all have days yeah, where, look, it's like anything. Sometimes I'll turn up and I always give my absolute best no matter how I'm feeling, but certain conversations just don't click, or the energy's not quite there.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah,
not this one.
So yeah, no, it is. It's it is challenging, but I think that's kind of normal, you know? Like, you know yourself, when you're standing on stage and you're delivering in front of hundreds and hundreds of people, everyone else can tell you you're doing amazingly, but if you know that you could have done better, or yeah, especially if it's something that you're responsible for as well, because I'm very quick to identify when the team are failing, or if there's something that could have happened, or if we could have been better organised.
Yeah. But
it's actually a lot tougher when it's perhaps something that lays on my door, you know, perhaps the preparation wasn't there, or, yeah, something I should really have been able to mitigate. Yeah, so I do beat myself up. But I don't think that's a bad thing either, because you don't want to be surrounded by yes people saying, oh, but Ellie, that's amazing. I know if I've done a shit job and I need to...
Tell me I'm shit.
I need to experience that pain so that I don't repeat the same mistake. You know, if I'm just living in a delusional planet thinking I'm excellent all the time, then where's the motivation to get better?
So you talk about motivation. One of the things that nobody could ever deny is that you're a resilient person.
Resilient, yes.
So bounce back ability, the ability to keep pushing forward on the down days, on the challenging days, when things don't go to plan, or you've not enjoyed a podcast interview or done it to the best of your ability, or, you know, in the background, something to do with one of the other businesses. How do you deal with the down days? Do you have a routine? Do you have something that is your go-to, or is it just a case of have a cup of tea and carry on?
Yeah, keep calm and carry on. I don't drink tea.
I know, but you do drink a lot of coffee.
Yeah, I need to work on that.
You know, we'll just have more.
To be honest with you, again, I think people do expect this really sort of motivational Tony Robbins style answer, but somebody's success is just putting one foot in front of the other. When you experience those lows, when things go against you, it's just being able to continue to carry on. You know, I do a lot of things in terms of like self-care. I'm very mindful about my nutrition, the supplements and vitamins I take. I have my ice baths, I exercise regularly. I'm no stranger to breathwork sessions. I do a lot of mindful meditation and things to help me get to sleep. But I wouldn't really say it's any of those things, to be honest with you. I think it's just some sort of inner grit and knowing that, you know what, no one's coming to save you, and it's okay to experience those. It's okay not to be okay. We all have days where we're down, but it's not okay to stay there.
Yeah.
And it's about realizing as well, now that I'm doing the podcast and we're making such an impact, and this is going out to hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, that I'm actually working on something that's bigger than me now. And people are getting so much value from that. And I treat the podcast as my university of life. So when you are researching these incredible guests, when you might be reading their books or listening to previous interviews that you've done, it's very difficult to remain in a negative energy, because you're just surrounding yourself constantly with so much wisdom. And
yeah,
it's that old cliche, your network's your net worth. I truly believe that. You are the people that you spend the most around the most amount of time with. And pre-2008, my network was just full of really miserable, negative people that did nothing but complain. And by the way, I was the world's worst at that myself, like absolutely the world's worst. But whenever I'm doubting my abilities and I'm looking at people that have went before me and done the things that I'm trying to achieve, quite often to a far greater standard and level, it just destroys any limiting beliefs that I've got. You know, if they can do it, if it's humanly possible, then why not me?
But possible.
I also think, as someone, you know, my sister's been diagnosed with bipolar, my mum's been diagnosed with bipolar, I know that I could go to the doctor and get a bipolar diagnosis tomorrow, should I wish to do that. But I choose to see that as a superpower. And one of the things I talk about a lot, as you know, is mindset. But really, as I've evolved over the last couple of years, I try to really speak more about emotional intelligence rather than the mindset as well, because it's been able to regulate those moods. And it's also been able to have the self-awareness. Like, if you're feeling shit, like sometimes it might just be some crazy chemical imbalance, fair enough, but the majority of time, if you're feeling shit, there's a reason you're feeling shit. Is it because of the company you're keeping? Is it because of the bullshit you're listening to on the TV or radio? You know, is it because you're underachieving? Is it because you've been eating crap? Have you been drinking too much alcohol? Have you been neglecting your exercise? Perhaps you've not had any alone time, because like you, I'm someone who, I'm a social butterfly. And when I'm not out networking or podcasting, I'm with my amazing family, my three beautiful children, my husband, my two crazy dogs. But I'm also somebody that really likes my own company, and every night at home, without exception, I have my bath, I have my Epsom salts. I either just have complete silence or I use that as time to watch YouTube videos, preparing for podcasts. And I need that to keep my sanity. I do a lot of sort of long dog walks where I'm just going out, and we're so lucky, got loads of beautiful animals and things, and a nice little walk around us, which is amazing. Or again, sometimes I just listen to music, I zone out. I don't want to do any personal development. I just want to catch my own thoughts, or again, just have complete silence. So they're all quite good coping mechanisms. And I am somebody who always preaches that you can't pour from an empty cup. And as a mum and as a multiple business owner, we don't always take our own advice. But I do think over the last few years, I've been a lot better than that. As you know, because we've just been to Mexico on a retreat for a week, we're here in Dubai. You know, I could record these podcasts in the UK, but there's some amazing people out here. There's just an amazing vibe. So now I've just got the mindset, well, why wouldn't I go out and just maximize this experience and use this as an opportunity to have fun, meet amazing people, network, and also feel like all those years of hard work are for something as well. I'm not saving up all my money for my retirement, because as you know, as you've had to learn the hard way with your own mum, you know, tomorrow's not guaranteed for any of us. So yeah, I think it's important to me to try and enjoy every single day and also have that perspective as well, because we're very, very blessed living in the UK. I mean, I've got the most amazing family. To use all your phrases, I'm raising legends. I've got a husband who fully supports me to go and live life on my terms and facilitates me being able to travel to Mexico and goodness knows where else while he's holding the fort. It's not a traditional relationship. And I think that's important to have that gratitude and also to create a life that's enjoyable every single day, because so many people live for the weekend or they live for the next holiday. And don't get me wrong, it's not all super glamorous. There's a lot of boring admin work and stuff like that that goes on behind the scenes. But by and large, I have created a life that's really fun, really fulfilling, that I'm really passionate about, doing something that I absolutely love. And now I'm actually getting paid for it as well. I mean, how does it get any better than that?
How often do you actually sit down and think that? Because one of the things that we've talked about quite often, you know, it's something that I'm massively passionate about, is that people have got to celebrate the wins along the way.
Yeah.
What does celebrating the wins look like? Whether that's getting a property deal over the line, getting the podcast guest that you've been chasing for a while, you know, being recognised in some sort of media, getting, you know, some sort of accolade. How do you celebrate the wins, the small and the big?
It usually involves booking some sort of holiday.
Work trip.
We are pretty good at that. But again, we could all be better.
Yeah.
One of the best books that I've ever read is called The Gap in the Game by a previous podcast guest of mine, Benjamin Hardy. And he talks about this. And it's not just for business people and entrepreneurs. Right. But we get something. We climb a mountain. I've interviewed Olympic athletes, world champions, people from all sectors, people that have become billionaires, people that have sold their companies for 8 and 9 figures. And the same thing comes up time and time again. You're working towards this goal and everything, every sort of focus is on doing that. And you really believe that when you get to whatever milestone that is, and it doesn't need to be something huge like becoming a billionaire, that suddenly you're going to become happy. But actually, I realized quite early on in this journey, 2018, when we started our property business, as you know, I was on job seekers allowance, didn't have any money in the bank. We weren't destitute. We had a detached house, 2 nice cars on the drive. You know, I'm not trying to say we were living in property, but we were your stereotypical middle class, you know, lived a good life, with a fuck all in the bank, you know? And that was our reality. When I got made redundant on maternity leave, I actually had a short stint when I signed up for job seekers allowance, which was a bit of an all-time low for me in terms of my ego. I'd once been a high-performance person responsible for 100 staff, yet here I was sitting at the job centre with my double pram, with Sam and Bella looking up at me, and I'm filling out page after page of paperwork just to get my £70 a week. And I just remember thinking there and then, this will not be my reality. My children, thankfully, were too young to remember that. But that was my motivation there and then. That and the fact that one of my old colleagues came up to me, because when I'd worked in the prison service for so long, we had very close ties with the job centre. within the resettlement department where I worked. And an old colleague came up and said, "Oh, Ellie, I've not seen you for a long time. I didn't realise you were back working here." And the embarrassment of having to say, "Oh, no, actually, I'm just a customer. These are my two babies. I'm just here to sign on for my benefits, just like everywhere else." I just still to this day, if I take myself back there, I can feel that anxiety, that shame that washed all over me. And when we did our property education at the time, we had no money, but we were connecting with people that did have money. And within 4 days of finishing the course, we'd secured two properties. We'd had two offers accepted, not using any of our own money. And that was the start of the journey. And the reason I share that is because we had an incredible first year by pretty much anyone's standards. Yeah. We did 25 property deals in our first year. Some we were just sourcing, others were flips. We were doing assisted sales. We were doing all sorts of creative strategies that we'd been taught. But I remember thinking when we get to, I can't remember what the figure was, but a specific figure per month or a specific amount of properties in our portfolio, I'll feel better, because my mental health was on its arse. I was having panic attacks. I was on all sorts of heavy medication. I had been for years. I've been for over a decade, just papering over the cracks. So this is where it sort of goes back to the gap and the gain. When you get to that point, when you climb to that mountaintop that you've been aiming towards, if you're not focusing on the right things, you realise it's very hollow, empty place to be, because you've not addressed any of the other things in your life that are important. And then you do just have that fleeting moment of, yes, brilliant, amazing, we've hit this goal. And then literally within seconds, you're like, right, what now? And actually it can be really demoralizing, deflating feeling, which is why so many gold medal Olympians end up with addiction issues or depression. And people are speaking a lot more openly about this, mental health. Professional footballers, after they're retired and they've been used to earning X amount of millions and having the spotlight on them and having all this accolade, and then all of a sudden they're kind of
disappeared,
like disregarded, unless you're lucky enough to be a pundit or a manager. And the same thing comes up over and over again. So I do feel that I learned that from quite an early age, not to attach my happiness to a specific financial goal. And also realizing when I looked in that mirror that I needed to, that was the first time I really looked in that mirror, I realised I needed to change. Like, who did I need to become? And that's something that I talk about quite a lot, because it's not necessarily what you need to do to become successful. It's who do I need to become? And at that point, there was no exercising. There was no self-development. There was no responsibility.
Just getting out of bed was hard enough.
Yeah, just getting out of bed. And this is where your definition of success changes. And that's why I do that really cheesy thing in my quotation marks, which I actually hate when other people do. Because for some people, success is having a specific amount of money in the bank. For somebody else, it might be a body goal. You know, I'm not here to impose my values on other people. But for me, having the money in the bank without having the strong relationships with your family, without having the positive mental health, with, you know, when you're having dark thoughts and your reality is that you'd rather not be here, it doesn't really matter how many millions of pounds you've got sat in your bank account, as we see time and time again with all the celebrities who sadly take their own lives. And you know, on Instagram or on paper, they have everything that most normal people have been conditioned to aspire for. And you think, well, and this is another downside actually of mental health. When you do get to a certain level, there is almost a pressure. And as a positive person who talks so much about mindset, you can also feel that when you are going through a low point or where you are struggling, you can't really say anything because people see that you're traveling around with social media or it's you're doing okay X, Y, and Z. It's very much that it's okay for you mentality. And one of the reasons I do share with people who follow me online, I try to be as vulnerable and authentic, I know that word's a bit cheesy now and overused, as I can, is because there is a tendency for people to say exactly that. It's okay for you. And that was me as well when I looked at other people online. And you have to just remind perhaps those of, you know, those of my followers who haven't been with me for as long on this journey. Look, we all start off with zero followers. We all start off with zero engagement. Mm. If you see me on stage speaking in front of hundreds and hundreds of people, that's not been an easy process for me to get to, because the first time I went into the property training and I was selected to go and do a 30-second elevator pitch in front of a room full of like 15 or 16 people, a very small crowd, I was physically trembling and shaking. You know, that was my reality. I was somebody that struggled to get out the door because the panic attacks were so bad. So I share that because when people see me speaking with confidence, or they see me swanning around and posting these pictures with these celebrities and things, I want to make it very clear that that's been a process, that's been a lot of hard work, because as early as January 2019, I was struggling to get out of bed. I withdrew suddenly off all my medication. I was that person. I went to a motivational, it was actually a Grant Cardone event in Glasgow. It's absolutely fantastic. And I was lucky enough to go out for lunch and have dinner with Grant and Eleanor Cardone as well, as kind of part of the package. I was literally sat right next to them and we were chatting about the pharmaceutical industry and talking about antidepressants specifically. And Grant's got some strong views in that area, and actually I agree with them. But what I shouldn't have done is just go off cold turkey. I should have consulted with my doctor and safely came off my medication gradually. So please, anyone listening to this, don't do what I did, because I went from being relatively okay, albeit depressed and struggling with these mental health problems,
But managing
outwardly, to not being able to get out of bed, to being very close to making an irreversible decision and feeling that like my life was of no value to other people. And again, I just actually, it's a bit of a dark subject, but just while we're talking about suicide, before I'd felt those feelings myself, I always thought it was quite a selfish act. Mm-hmm. How could you do that? How could you leave your children? How could you leave your family? You must not love your children as much as I love my children, because I would never, ever do that. But when you're in those depths of despair, when you're experiencing those emotions, those feelings, you feel less than worthless. You truly believe that by you making that decision, your children, your family will have a better life without your negative influence, without you dragging them down into your cesspit of darkness. I just wanted to share that really, because I think there's still quite a lot of judgment around suicide. And I also think, I'm just going to go on a little bit of a rant about this, all of this hashtag be kind. And when people, not just celebrities, just normal people, take the unfortunate decision to end their own lives, the amount of people that will then step up and say, God, I didn't know anything about it.
Yep.
I wish they'd have spoken out. I wish they'd have said to me. I don't always think that that's the reality.
No.
I think a lot of people do actually say, as I did, look, I'm struggling. I went to very close friends at the time and actually said, look, I'm really struggling. I'm having really dark thoughts at the moment. And you get a bit of sympathy over a cup of coffee, maybe one follow-up WhatsApp message, and that's it. You're on your own. And actually that can be a lot more damaging, because when you are that vulnerable, when you're experiencing that level of darkness and you take the brave and difficult decision to speak up about it and to ask for help, and people in your network, as in my case, don't really step up and help, that can actually be the thing that tips you over the edge.
It can cement the idea that, actually, you're right, no one does believe in you, you are worthless, maybe the world would be better off without you. And it's taken a dark turn, but isn't our role in what we do, and yours in particular with your podcast, to shine a light and show, you know, that there is light at the end of the tunnel? Because as you say, it's very easy for people to go, it's okay for Ellie. They see you on one day interviewing, you know, a multimillionaire, a decamillionaire, a billionaire. They see you the next day. You're in Dubai, you're in Mexico. But I think this is, you know, I'm a huge fan of people telling their stories and the highs and the lows. And I think that's honestly, having known you for a fair while now, that's honestly, I think, the most vulnerable I've ever seen you in terms of saying, actually, I'm just going to share this, because you never know how many people you're impacting the lives of. We talk about this. You mentioned earlier on tens of thousands of people, possibly millions of people listening to this. But there might be that one person who right now is the year of 2019 in January, who's not got the ticket to the Grant and Eleanor Cardone dinner with them, but they're listening because they're thinking, I just need a little bit of help. Yeah. So there's actually a ton of questions that I've got off the back of that. So,
but intentions of sharing any of that.
I'm really glad that you did.
That was like therapy.
I've had that said before. Hi, I'm the cheapest form of therapy. But that's the safe space, isn't it, that you create as you do this as an interviewer. We talk a lot around interview skills and interview styles, and sometimes it's very rare that I'll do interviews. That's doubling down on it now with the new podcast. But this is the part that I think is the most real and raw part, because we talk a lot about being genuine and authentic, and they are buzzwords to some people. Yeah. You know, this is the real me, but then you see them in real life and it's not.
Well, this is another thing. Like I say to you, I do feel like I catfish people, and I tell anyone that I speak to that I am the ultimate catfish. I have 2 professional photo shoots a year. I get my makeup done, I get my hair done, I'll have all my nice outfits on. But if you meet me on the other 363 days of the year, that's not what I look like.
With this conversation regularly. But again, I think that just cements, because there are people who say, oh yeah, you know, this is the real me, but they're the ones who are waking up and putting makeup on first thing in the morning. They won't do a Zoom because they fear people will judge them. They're living a life that people expect of them.
Yeah.
And I like that you share the highs and the lows. There are a couple of questions that I do want to ask off the back of that. And one of them, the first one being, obviously we touched upon, you know, you're at the other end of the tunnel. You can see light now, you've got some real, you know, you've got a fabulous life that you've created, and you're taking ownership for the fact that you've created that. In the dark times and the challenging times, do you believe now, looking back, that day, you know, pushing the double buggy into your old place of work and knowing that you were going to be judged, and that feeling of, you know, shame that you mentioned earlier on, do you believe that that happened for a reason? Do you believe that you have gone through the pain of doing a cold turkey, taking you off all of your own medications, which is never a smart move, but you did it? Do you deep down genuinely believe that you've gone through those things so that you can lead other people and tell them this is the right way to do it, this is the wrong way to do it?
Hey, it's all good social content, isn't it? The trials and tribulations of Ellie McKay. I mean, it goes back further than that. It goes back to 2000 and the womb. How long have we got? So 2006, Mark and I, my husband, we've been together 18 years now. We were young, we're in our early 20s, we're full of the entrepreneurial spirit. We knew that we were both destined for more. I mentioned prior to my stint in the prisons, which I was doing for about 8-9 years, I'd actually worked in sales, so I was a regional sales manager, and that is why I moved from Scotland to Doncaster age 19. Through family circumstances, I mentioned my sister was bipolar. A few years later, I did leave the sales industry because I had to be a lot more present for my family. I couldn't be working 6-7 days a week. I needed a 9-to-5. I needed to be able to support them and travel to Scotland every weekend and things. So I made the decision to step back and do what you class as just a regular 9-to-5. I dropped down to 16 grand a year working in recruitment, which was a significant drop in pay. So we decided, Mark was an electrician, but he always had the bit between his teeth. He always commanded more money than everyone else. He always negotiated better packages for not just him, but for the entire team of lads. We sat there on a beanbag and we Google get rich quick. Like, that is a true story. It was a true story. Nothing's changed. Always chasing the shiny penny. But it was a toss up between stocks and shares and property. And we decided to do property. We bought off plan a property that was purchased for 125 grand, should have been worth 200,000. We'd saw all the due diligence, this was what was going to happen. They were putting a lot of infrastructure into the city of Sheffield at that time. A lot of big companies were relocating there. It was going to be a riverside development. They had a funding awarded to a multi-million pound cleanup of the riverside. There's going to be these bars and cafes, and they were going to make it a real sort of cosmopolitan hub.
This was going to change your life.
This was going to change our life. But of course, things never pan out like that. The development got flooded and everything got postponed for quite a few years. And it wasn't actually complete until 2010, smack bang in the middle of the global recession. Although we went into the recession in 2008, property prices didn't actually bottom to back into 2010, 2011. So this property that we'd bought for 125 grand, that was meant to be worth 200 grand, was suddenly worth 65 grand. I mean, it's still in our portfolio, and it's still not worth a fraction of what we paid for it. But it was absolutely horrendous. We had something like 6 weeks to come up with 40 grand. Otherwise, they were going to go after our house, which was nothing special. It was a property Mark had before he met me, a 3-bed semi-detached. We both had a couple of second-hand cars. We didn't have a penny to our name, really, yeah. At that point. We'd invested absolutely everything into this property deal, and we just had the rug pulled. It was absolutely horrendous. The developers were not very scrupulous, shall we say. I'll not go into that, but the whole experience was so stressful. We had to beg, we had to borrow, we had to get bank loans just to meet our financial obligations, and I pretty much had a full mental breakdown. That was really the start of my mental health journey, yeah. Shall we say. I was really stressed out. I was struggling to go to work at that point, and there was no way I was interested in being an entrepreneur or a business owner after that. I just wanted the comfort and the security of the 9-to-5. I was very risk averse. I wanted to know what day I was getting paid, how much I was getting paid, and that was absolutely fine for me, that certainty. But Mark, however, after he'd licked his wounds, he, you know, remained a lot more positive than I was at the time, and he launched, alongside our still to this day business partner, the other Mark, the electrical business. And they grew it bit by bit. They got a couple of apprentices, and they got up to 18 lads working for them at one point. And then in 2016, a national construction company went under. It was completely unprecedented. No one knew that they were struggling, and they took down a lot of smaller companies, yeah. In the aftermath. The two Marks made a decision. They knew they weren't going to get paid by this point. They had 18 guys working for them. They'd worked for the full month. And they'd made the decision to go to the bank to get a bank loan, because none of this was public knowledge. Their credit was still very strong at that point, to pay the 18 guys, knowing that that one decision could be enough to send us under. And one of our company values to this day is people over profit. So many people talk the talk,
yeah,
they don't fucking walk the walk, and I see that every day. It's really, really frustrating. But we paid every single one of those lads the money that they were due. And the reason I'm sharing that story with you, Tony, is because you talk about these particular moments walking into the job centre, coming off the medication. 2016 was probably the first time that we had that spark, that drive, because Mark and I sat down and had a conversation. Although I wasn't directly involved in the business, I was very much part of this journey. I mean, we nearly lost our family, the home. We nearly lost everything. The stress we were under was, if you've not been there, it's immeasurable. You're waking up in the night with heart palpitations, with cold sweats. Mark was working 18 hours on site. He was back on the tools, doing whatever it took to try and get these contracts over the line. I'm heavily pregnant at the time with our daughter Isabella. I'm signed off work with stress. They thought I had Crohn's disease, but again, with 2020, I think it was all stress-related. Yeah. But that entire pregnancy, I was in and out of hospital, or I was pretty much in bed. It was such a challenging time. And Mark basically had a choice. He could either work away and leave me, who, you know, vulnerable. Was at a high risk of miscarriage, really needed the support of my husband. I wasn't able to drive. I needed to be able to get to the hospital quickly. Or he could be in Birmingham finishing this contract and trying to keep the roof over our home. It was such a horrible situation for him to be in at that time. And after it all crumbled and we knew what we were dealing with, we knew we were in, I think we lost something to the tune of about 75 grand, which might not sound like a huge amount of money now in terms of the sort of property deals that we're doing, but back then that was everything. That was everything we had, plus then some. And Mark, as I said before, was always very resourceful as an electrician. So we had a very serious conversation. Does he just go back to going on the tools, commanding 60, 70, 80 grand a year? Don't get me wrong, he'd had to work away for that and really put the hours and the graft in, but not a shabby amount of money up in the north of England where we live by the by the average person's standards. We had a very good life when he was earning that kind of money. And we just thought, no, there's no fucking way we have been through all of that pain. And it was pain.
Yeah.
And the pain lasted a lot of years. there's no fucking way we've been through all of that not to become successful. And our definition of success really changed. We didn't just want to be a little bit successful. Yeah. We wanted to be very successful. And one of our mantras, and something that I still have up in our office to this day, is we haven't come this far to only come this far. But that was 2016. So it's not like this big Hollywood climax and then you just have this huge upward trajectory.
And life's all fabulous.
Life's all great. As you know, I mean, I didn't think I attracted a lot of drama, but then when I started saying my story to people, I'm like, so then what happened? They're like, well, then, yeah, Isabella was born. She was like 3 months old. We're just trying to sort of get back on track to steady the ship in amongst all this chaos. Mark, I'm going to overshare, Tony.
I love a bit of overshare.
You love a bit of overshare. I really need to stop telling the story. So we've got our two children. We're going through all this stress and chaos. Mark's booked in for the snip. We've had a conversation. We've got a beautiful family. We're sort of done it too. And he's booked in for his consultation on the Monday. And the Friday before, I found out I was pregnant with my third and definitely final little superstar, Sammy. And at the time, because my mental health was so bad, I just remember ringing my dad up in tears and going, Dad, you're not going to believe this. I'm pregnant. And my dad was just like, oh, darling, you've had the baby. Oh. No, Dad, this is another one. So Sammy was born in 2017, and then the following year I got made redundant whilst I was still on maternity leave, and obviously you know what happened there, yeah. The job seeker's allowance, then going into the property training. But it's just really interesting, and I think the powerful message that I want to get across here is motivation only takes you so far.
Yep.
You can have these rah-rah talks like we did. We've not come this far to only come this far. But then what happens?
The reality
takes in. Like, this is what happens all the time. People will go to a Tony Robbins. They'll be dancing around. They'll be doing their breath work. They'll be taking pages and pages of notes. I know because I've been there and that's been me. But it's changed my life. This is amazing. And then the car breaks down and the dog's sick in the carpet and the kids are playing up and life gets in the way, and then Tony Robbins becomes a distant memory, and
yeah.
Tony Robbins isn't there at 5 a.m. when my alarm goes off and I can just hit snooze. That motivation has to come from within forward. And the bigger you get, the bigger your challenges Absolutely. Get as well. So it's not like you get to a certain level. If anyone's listening to this and thinking, you know, when I get to X amount of money or if my podcast gets to whatever level, that life's all going to be sunshine and unicorns, because that's not anyone's reality.
No, absolutely. And I think people need to hear that. And it's really nice to hear these stories. There is, and I think that it's important for your listeners to hear that as well. You know, we're doing this as a twofold podcast. You mentioned Mark, and as we know, Mark is a legend. He is your biggest supporter. He's been the biggest part of your network and the most consistent person within there. You talked earlier on around, you know, potentially in the past, not necessarily having the right network, going to people to ask for help, the people who wouldn't share in your success or wouldn't give you a helping hand when you need it. You always talk about relationships being the highest form of currency, but what about those people who are listening now, who in the highest form of currency, that bank account's skint, they're surrounded by dickheads. You know, they go to work and they see people who they don't really enjoy spending time with. Maybe their family aren't the most supportive. Maybe they don't have a great group of friends. Or if they do, they're the people who are the negative people. How do people start balancing that checkbook? How do you go from a negative balance in your relationship account to a positive balance?
It's a great question. But the people listening to this are already taking action. They're listening to the free resources. They're listening to the podcasts. Because as you know, I went and I basically spent the last of my redundancy money and spent that in its entirety on your property education. Yeah. I got £7,000 redundancy and that went straight to the training company. Now, I'm not necessarily recommending everyone does that. We've always been burn the ships, throw caution to the wind, failure's not an option. So we do things that other people perhaps wouldn't or shouldn't do, because we all have our own sort of risk profiles, and clearly mine is quite high. But we sold our family home. We made the decision. We were actually meant to be moving house. The whole thing fell through and we stepped back and we thought, you know what? this is a once in a lifetime opportunity for us. Why don't we move into rental accommodation? We had about 150 grand in equity at the time. We can really use this to invest in ourselves. We joined masterminds, we got mentors, we got coaches. We put the money into property deals and hiring staff and systems and processes. And it really gave us a massive leg up. But things like listening to podcasts, listening to audiobooks, reprogramming your mind, that's what I did day in, day out, to the point that people that were in my network thought that I'd been brainwashed. They thought, well, you've joined a cult. I thought, well, it's not a bad cult. It's a
making me wealthy.
Yeah, this cult of people that are showing me how to make money, how to invest sensibly, how to build generational wealth, how to manage assets, how to manage risk.
But I'm also, all for that cult.
Oh yeah, exactly. How to create a positive mindset, to focus more on health, to take that personal responsibility. Now, personal responsibility is huge. I was
very underrated.
Honestly, I swear to God, I share this from personal experience. I was one of life's victims. Mm-hmm. I could have spent, I would moan to anyone who wanted to hear it. If I had a bad day at work, I wanted to tell everybody about it. I probably spent more than 8 hours I had at work, like telling my entire network how shit my day was, keeping that negativity going, keeping that bad energy going. The reason I wasn't sick, well, we got screwed over by the developers. Like, we got the recession happened, the floods happened,
there was a lot of blame elsewhere.
Bullied at work, and all of these things were true. You had a very turbulent relationship with certain family members. We were we were victims. But while you're in that mindset, regardless of what the reality is, you're giving other people the power and the control over your life. Whilst you focus on the things that are in your control, like, that is where you're going to see real changes. Ultimately, we can only control ourselves. And, you know, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting to get different results. These people in my life weren't going to change. The only thing that I could change was myself. And getting around people who had that can-do attitude, as opposed to perhaps me saying to a family member, we're getting into property, what about Brexit? Yeah. You don't know about this.
Throwing shade at you. Yeah.
You know, instead, I was hanging around with people that were further down that path, property millionaires and multimillionaires, and I was sponging off them and I was absorbing their energy. And whilst the people listening to this may not be in the position with regards to that question specifically, they've got net balance in their bank account, there are things that you can do. Listening to my podcast, listening to your podcast, listening to other people's podcasts, people that have been through a similar journey that are also, yes, they're sharing their vulnerabilities, but also giving practical advice on how to start a business or how to start a side hustle or how to try and take action to turn your life around as well. I think we are really lucky. There's a lot of free networking events out there. We've got YouTube. We have an infinite amount of resources. And whilst I get the whole argument, if you don't pay, you don't pay attention, for a lot of people, they just simply don't have the money, and I wouldn't encourage them to get into debt either. Exhaust the free resources, because if you are not someone who's absolutely keen in YouTube, podcasts, audiobooks, free networking events, etc., then why is it going to be any different when you physically invest cash that you've not got?
Do you know what? I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, and the irony being, I do sell training courses, I sell mentorship programs, but we talk quite often about the fact that ethics are always going to come first. And I think so often when people talk about, if you don't pay, you don't pay attention, it's the monetary pay. Well, actually, if you're listening to podcasts, if you're watching YouTube videos, you're paying in a different way. You're paying with time, and that's our most limited resource. Yeah. And you are wasting it if you're sitting listening to those podcasts with every intention, because motivation does only get you so far. You said that earlier on. You've got to get off your arse. You've got to do something. You've got to take ownership for it. And that's something that I think you've done in abundance. And I want to touch upon what you said in terms of, you know, surrounding myself with people who would listen to the negativity. This is wrong with the day, this is shit, that's shit. And you mentioned about upgrading the network. The phrase that you hear quite often is, you can't change the people around you, but you can change the people around you. So now you've got a great network of people who is next on your hit list? Because you've got this great network of people around you and you continually, I'm witnessing it. I want that person on the podcast, send them a message. No airs and graces about it. I think they'd be great. I think it'd be great for you. Who is your ideal podcast guest?
The people that really inspire me are people like David Goggins, people like Wim Hof. Because we were speaking before and you thought it would be somebody like Richard Branson who actually might have an opportunity to interview, which would be absolutely insane. But I'm also a great believer that your business can only grow at the same extent that you do. I don't particularly class myself as a business person. That's not what I do best. I do relationships, and when you do things, I know it sounds really cheesy and cliche, but when you find something that you love and that you're passionate about, you can then monetize it.
Yep.
It's amazing what can actually be achieved. But for that reason, I know how far I've come and I'm really proud of what I've achieved to this point, but I also know that I'm not even scratching the surface. There is still a lot about myself that I want to change, and that's not in a self-deprecating way.
Yeah.
That's not bullshitting myself and realising that I'm only achieving a fraction of my potential. And that's actually something that I find very motivating.
It's exciting. Inspiring.
I'm thinking, wow, if I can do all this and I'm probably only playing at about 30%, then let's see what can happen when I get to 100%. And the people that make me want to level up and the people that I resonate with in that area are people like Wim Hof talking about the power of the cold water and the breath work and the psychology behind it, and David Goggins, who I think's, although he's got a huge following, millions of followers online, he's probably one of the most misunderstood men on the planet. And I think actually what he's doing with physical endurance and is very similar to what Stephen Hawkins has done in terms of, like, you know, this is brain power. And people will be listening to that thinking, what, he's a guy that just does like the ultra runs and stuff. It's like it's the what he's learning about the psychology and mental resistance, in my opinion, is a lot more valuable than going to some shrink or psychologist on the NHS who are probably taking antidepressants themselves, overweight, smoke, drink too much,
sitting watching the time while they're, because it's a job for them and not something that they choose to do.
Yeah. And I'm going to say something really controversial here, and it's not really in line with the question, but something like a LinkedIn a few weeks ago, and it was a psychiatrist who was basically saying that they were like fucked mentally and they took all sorts of medication and things, and all the messages of support saying that it just makes you a better psychologist, is vulnerability and things like that. I'm like, clearly what you're practicing and preaching doesn't work. Yeah. Like that's a massive conflict. And yeah, someone like David Goggins, who has so much focus on building mental resilience, like he got me through that dark time in 2019. So I feel like I've got a real personal connection with him. And it's not about going out and doing the Marathon de Sable or anything like that. That's not actually his message. He's not trying to impose
resilience in general.
It is looking into that accountability mirror and not accepting your own bullshit, because you can bullshit the world, you can bullshit on social media, you can bullshit business partners, your husband, your kids. You can't bullshit yourself. And that's something that I still need to get a lot better at.
Yeah,
I need to make sure that I'm always showing up as the best version of myself. And yeah, I've got a long way to go, but if you're listening to this, I'd love to chat.
David Goggins, next podcast guest, putting it out there.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a couple of quick fire questions.
Oh, no. I don't do quick fire.
Oh, no. You sound so Yorkshire.
I'm spending too much time with Kira.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Quick fire questions. You have faced a lot of challenges within your life. What has been your biggest challenge that you're happy to have overcome? What I mean by that is not what's your biggest challenge you've ever faced, what's the most happy and proud of yourself, what's that challenge that you've overcome?
Well, there's a couple that have just sprung to mind, and there's a story that I've not actually shared that often, but it's definitely one of my proudest moments. It's definitely like a marker of my success, and it was a good few years ago now. The property training company that I used to learn from, could think of the word. Something to love. That's not a great trade for a podcast host. I don't know why people listen to this podcast. But I was basically asked to go up and speak. It was quite a large room. It was maybe like 200 people, which for me was like,
Huge.
And it was basically a glorified testimonial. It wasn't like I was doing a keynote or anything else. I was maybe only up there like 5-10 minutes, something like that. But when you don't like public speaking and when you've got no self-confidence whatsoever,
feels like a lifetime.
Every minute is like an hour. And it was in Glasgow. I was in Scotland with Mark and the kids at the time. My dad still lived there, so we were having a couple of days with him. And on the day of the event, the kids were in the back and he was driving me over. And he was giving me a bit of a pep talk because I was panicking. And my mental health still wasn't amazing at that time. I was very much at the start of my journey. And Dad just said, I don't think I can do this. And he started sort of quoting some of my own posts back at me, which is really annoying. Like, look, you're one of the most motivational people I know. I wish you would just take your own advice sometimes. I've always found it a lot easier to help other people than I have to help myself. And, you know, hands up, full transparency, I don't always take my own advice. It's something I'm getting a lot better at, but, you know, we're all human. Anyway, he dropped me at this event and I was like in a state of panic. My name gets called, everyone's clapping, 200 people, I'm walking onto the stage and Paul, who was an old mentor of mine, was recording it from the back of the room. And I got through it. It was probably the most scary thing I'd ever done at that time relative to where I was with my property journey, my mental health, my confidence. Did my 5-minute slot or whatever it was. In the meantime, Mark's taking the kids to a little play area, which is not far from where the event is, but it's a huge big play area and had a big climbing wall. You had to be a certain age to go on it. And in order to get down the slide, you had to go right up this climbing wall. But Sienna, she must have been, I don't know, 5 at the time. She would get so far, get scared, come back down, try again. Get so far, get scared, come back down. And this kept happening and it kept happening. And she ran back over to Mark and she was in floods and tears. She's like, I can't do it. It's really scary. And Mark showed her a video of me getting off the stage and getting a bit of a standing ovation and everyone clapping. And Sienna just looked at the video and she said, I remember what Mummy said now. Mummy said that being brave doesn't mean that you don't get scared. Mummy said that being brave means you get scared and you do it anyway. And the Mackay girls can do anything. And she went up to this climbing wall, absolutely nailed it first time and went down the slide. And she was so proud of herself. And when I heard that, I just thought, wow, you know what? They're little sponges. Kids are listening to everything that we say and everything that we do. And they watch our actions. And to know that she'd seen me go through that process and still step up regardless of my own fear was just such an amazing life lesson for her to get as well. And it just gave me really, like, it gave me a lot of confidence to keep going and to keep pushing and to realise that there's a lot at stake here. You know, I've got 3 beautiful children that are watching my every move. And yeah, and you know, it's quite funny as well. It's such a cool story. I said it to Sienna 5 years ago now. I said to her, she's like, that didn't happen. I was like, oh, don't you remember that time? She's like, that didn't happen. I was like, it absolutely did. Like, do not ruin my story.
I love the fact that she just peed all over your parade. It's one of your proudest moments. Yeah. And she just shut you down in flames.
Isn't that kids for you, though, isn't it?
Oh, that's an awesome story.
It is, isn't it?
It is. It's ruined the quick fire questions because they're not very quick fire anymore.
Oh shit, was that one of the quick fire ones?
Don't worry.
Okay, right. No. I told you.
That's all right.
I'm not a quick fire kind of gal. I'm not.
I'm going to ask you one more question.
That's probably more sense.
Because it'll have a longer answer. So what is the one subject matter that nobody ever asks you about that you'd love to speak about? Or what's the one question nobody has ever asked you and you think I'd love someone to ask me that?
Honestly, I never really leave an interview or Q&A or anything like that, feeling like it's going to sound a little bit woo-woo. I just think people ask what they need to ask. And yeah, there isn't a particular subject matter that I'm going to talk about everything.
But is there ever a question that you've asked a guest of yours and think, oh, I'd love to answer that one. Here's my thoughts. Or do you just give them anyway?
I think, you know, a cool question would be, what's your motivational tune? Like, what gets you going?
Ellie, what is your motivational tune?
I like Sia, Unstoppable. Ooh. Yeah, if I'm ever having a dip of confidence, I'll put a little bit of Sia on, or it'll get me pumped up, or get me primed and ready to go.
I like it.
Yeah.
If you were ever in a boxing match, I'm just going to keep going with the questions because I've got a minute left. If you're ever in a boxing match or a martial arts match or a whatever, you got to punch someone square in the face.
Ooh.
Who would it be?
Oh, there's so many. Matt Hancock?
Matt Hancock. I like it.
And the public, by the way, are really fickle. Like, this man destroyed our nation. And you're all fucking cheering him on because he's been like, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. Like, hello.
I like it. And I'm going to reverse the role because on your podcast, you always talk about the podcast being called On a Mission. Right now, because I know it changes over time, Ellie Mackay, what is your mission?
Mm-hmm. You know what? Like, I should be more prepared for that question.
I love the fact that you're not.
Yeah. It's a true measure of my character. Honestly, if you'd have asked me that even 12 months ago, I feel like I'd have had a prepared statement on an impact of a billion lives and all of that. And I don't know, some people truly may believe that, but I think there's also a lot of insincerity about. For me, my podcast is my university of life. So my mission is to learn, it's to grow as a person, and to share that value with as many people as possible.
I think that gives us the perfect way to stop. Thank you so much for allowing me to interview you.
Yay! Thanks, Tony.